Hi, and welcome to the Rachel Sellers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing free education about all things mental health. This podcast is about ending the mental health stigma and helping people cultivate a deeper awareness and understanding of themselves. Mental health education matters, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned and what I know. I'm your host, Rachel, and I'm so glad you're here. Today, we're talking all about strategies for nervous system regulation. And before we dive into some tools and strategies, I want to give a quick recap of these past few episodes. I know that learning about the polyvagal theory for the first time can feel like a lot of new information at once. That makes sense because it is a lot of new information at once. And it's a lot of terms and ideas that you may have never considered before. So I think it would be helpful to give a quick summary, like a highlight reel of sorts. So we've been talking about this system in your body called the autonomic nervous system. You learn that this system has a really important job, and its job is to take sensory input from the environment and prepare your body mentally, physically, and emotionally to react in a certain way. We talked about how your autonomic nervous system is like a surveillance system. It's always scanning for safety or danger, and it's always acting accordingly. We went kind of into depth about these three different types of nervous system responses, and I want to review those really quickly and dive into a little bit about what are some of the physical sensations, feelings, thoughts, and behaviors that are pretty common or typical for each different response. I think that's a really good way to kind of learn a little bit more about each response and also to be able to be curious about knowing when you are in which one of these responses, knowing which one of these responses may be happening at any given moment. So you have the social response. This response activates the social engagement system, which is also the ventral vagal complex. I think I mentioned in the first episode how there's so many words for the same thing. I know it can get a little frustrating, but your first response, the first option that your nervous system has is to engage the social response. Again, it activates the social engagement system or the ventral vagal complex. The system is activated or responds when the body senses safety in the environment. This enables us to be connected in social relationships and grounded and present focused. So some of the physical symptoms, not symptoms, sensations. I'm so used to symptom language as a therapist. Physical sensations, some of those that are common when the social response is enacted, are things like regulated and rhythmic breathing, good digestion, and you might feel rested and attentive or just at ease. Some of the thoughts that you might have when you're in this state are thoughts like, I feel safe, this is fun, I'm grateful, I'm being productive, I'm supported, and I feel connected. Some common feelings that are pretty typical in this response are feelings like being content, grounded, present, enjoying the moment, feeling connected, listened to, passionate, confident, curious, and creative. And then some of the behaviors that you might do when you're in this social response are things like laughing and playing, maybe meditating or having sex, hiking, walking, or working. So that's a little overview and recap of that ventral vagal complex. Remember, that's the social response. And that response happens, our bodies automatically enact this response when it neurocepts, which remember is like the body scanning the environment for safety or danger, right? So the social response is enacted when the body neurocepts safety. So let's move on to the second response that we've learned about. And the second one is that sympathetic fight or flight response. You learn that the system is activated or responds when your body senses danger. It responds by mobilizing, shifting pretty quickly into survival mode, ready to defend itself. We all know what it feels like when this system is activated, because this is your stress response system. And I think it's pretty accurate to say that 2020 has given our stress response systems the ride of its life. So what are some of the physical sensations that you might feel when you're in this fight or flight response? Some of those physical sensations are heart racing, kind of a shallow, rapid breathing, like heavy, lots of breathing in the chest versus that deep breathing into your diaphragm. That is not very characteristic of this state, but that rapid, shallow breathing is. You might feel restless and jittery. You might feel increased blood pressure or just an adrenaline rush. Some of the thoughts that are pretty characteristic of this response are, this is overwhelming, I'm afraid, this is too much, I'm never going to get it all done, oh, I'm going to be late, this is a mess, or I'm in danger. We tend to overthink a lot when we're in this state. That might look like ruminating, so repeating the same thought over and over again, or predicting the future, or even catastrophizing, so kind of using our thoughts to make things appear bigger than they really are. Some of the feelings that are associated with this state are feelings that in the year 2020 we all know well. Feelings like being afraid, anxious, worried, stressed, frustrated, angry, overwhelmed, irritated, or scared. Some of the behaviors that you might see when the system is activated are things like defensiveness, being chronically busy, being very perfectionistic, using a lot of distraction or avoidant behaviors, being pretty controlling of either yourself or others, or even being aggressive or passive aggressive. All of those things kind of indicate that the body is in this sympathetic fight or flight response. Okay, so we also learned about the third kind of option that your nervous system has for responding to the world around it. And that's the parasympathetic freeze response. And this response activates the dorsal vagal system. This is the system that's activated when the body perceives extreme threat. It responds by collapsing. Think that playing dead or playing possum response. So what are some of the physical sensations associated with the parasympathetic freeze? That's going to look like decreased heart rate and blood pressure, a decreased ability to make eye contact, and a low awareness of self or others. In this state, the body really is kind of preparing for conservation of energy and preparing for shutdown. Some of the thoughts that you might have when you're in this state are thoughts like, I'm so lost, this is hopeless, I feel helpless, I'm doomed, I can't do it, no one understands, I can't cope, and nothing matters. Some feelings that are stereotypic of this state would be feelings of loneliness, depression, feeling disconnected, fatigued, brain fogged, hopeless, trapped, ashamed, or numb. And then some of the behaviors are going to be things like self-abandonment, excessive sleep, self-isolation, immobilization, low motivation, and low self-agency. Woof. Okay, that was a pretty big recap, but I think it was a pretty thorough one. So if you want to pause and rewind and go through that again, just to make sure you really feel like you have a solid understanding of each of those responses, I hope that you'll do that. You guys know I'm super passionate about this stuff, and in the second episode, I talked a lot about kind of the implications that I believe this theory has for mental health and wellness. And I'm not going to go over all of those here. You can go back and listen, but I do want to reiterate the most important point. And the most important point really is and boils down to awareness. Because of unprocessed trauma and pain, all the things that we have stuffed away and don't look at or say no big deal to, many of us are unconsciously kind of oscillating between the sympathetic fight or flight energy and this dorsal freeze energy. But we're not exactly conscious of that. For many of us, it's just kind of become the sort of default mode of living and being in the world, a sort of autopilot. And what we know about autopilot is that autopilot is easy, and conscious living is not. And yet consciousness and awareness are really necessary for self-awareness and for wellness and for change. So my big passion for this theory really is all about awareness and being able to develop the capacity to recognize these state shifts when you're moving from ventral to sympathetic to dorsal, so that we can be more aware of our triggers, what moves us in these states, and so we can be more proactive about understanding what moves us out of these states, specifically out of the sympathetic and the dorsal states and into that ventral vagal state. That is the state that we are in when our bodies feel safe. And that is the state that we don't want to be in it all the time, because we know that our sympathetic and our dorsal systems, they're there for self-protection. They're not bad. But we live in a pretty unbalanced world. And one of the ways that we can start to reclaim some balance in our lives is to be intentional about spending time in that ventral state. So I'm also really passionate about helping people who are struggling with various mental health disorders or struggles recognize that a part of their healing is going to come from soothing and recalibrating your nervous system. Mental health is not just about the brain. We're not brains on sticks. Mental health is also about the body. And we're waking up to that. We're realizing that more and more, especially as research in the field of trauma and neuroscience continue to back this up. So if it's true that mental health is not just about the brain and also about the body, then part of cultivating a better mental health is going to be learning some simple strategies to help with nervous system regulation. And before I dive into some of these strategies, I want to talk about why these are important skills and how they can help you cultivate a greater access to your ventral vagal system. So some of the, I guess you could say, benefits of these skills is that they help us be more in our bodies. They help us be more involved and present in our lives. They help us form greater connections with others and deepen our experience of internal safety and self-trust. There's actually some pretty cool research that points to having a better ability to regulate your nervous system actually strengthens your immune system. There's so much about immune suppression that is linked to being in that chronic hypervigilance, chronic stress, constant sympathetic activation. And what we know about nervous system regulation is that it can decrease anxiety and depression. So I want to talk a little bit about something called glimmers. Glimmers are like triggers, but glimmers, they obviously have a more positive connotation, right? Glimmers are things that bring us back into our ventral vagal state, so into that state of safety. When we think of the word trigger, it's usually used in a more negative connotation. Oh, something triggered me. That language is more about being triggered into a sympathetic or a dorsal activation. And a glimmer is a little bit more positive, right? And so it doesn't really make sense to say that, oh, I need to be triggered back into my ventral vagal state. No, our glimmers. Glimmers are things that help bring us back into that state of safety. And I want to talk about a few glimmers that are relatively common for all of us. Of course, these might be different from person to person, but a lot of these things really are things that I think they're things that we sometimes take for granted. But these are things that really can help bring us back into that ventral vagal state. So some of these are smiling, being with friends, being in the sun, having a coffee date, listening to music, being in nature, having an early morning quiet time or meditation time, playing with kids or pets, dancing in your apartment, cooking a meal, reading a book, going on a walk. All of these small things, these forms of self-care really are things that help activate and bring us back into that ventral vagal state. Something you might have maybe have already been thinking about as I was talking was this idea that glimmers really involve mindfulness. And this is likely a word that you've heard before. Before I really understood the word mindfulness, To be honest, I really thought it was the same thing as meditation, or that mindfulness was just about being zenfully calm. But that's not what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is not the same thing as meditation, and mindfulness doesn't mean being calm. It can mean being calm, but it doesn't have to mean being calm. Mindfulness is actually about present focus and present moment awareness. Mindfulness is about paying attention to the present moment without judgment. It sounds nice. It's actually pretty hard to practice. And yet mindfulness is an important part of staying in or moving into the ventral vagal state. So some of the tools that we need the most are tools or strategies to help us move from the sympathetic to the ventral state. Another way of saying that is movement from being stressed and into being grounded. So I'm going to list off a couple of things. They might be things you've already heard of as ways to easily accessible ways to cope with anxiety. Things like pushing against something heavy, so pushing really hard against a wall, that can be really helpful. Doing something called the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise. This is a mindfulness practice that can be really helpful if you are someone who tends to project yourself into the future and worry about the future a lot or ruminate on the past. So with the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise, you pause and you notice 5 things that you can see, 4 things that you can touch, 3 things that you can hear, 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. Another activity that's super helpful is something you also probably heard before, and that is practicing deep breathing. Now, the trick here, if you're using deep breathing to help you get from a place of feeling really stressed to a place of feeling grounded, the length of the inhale or the exhale can really make a big difference. So if you're using deep breathing as a stress reduction technique, then you want to focus on your exhale being longer than your inhale. So you might want to practice breathing in through your nose through the count of, let's say, 3, and breathing out either through your nose or through your mouth, counting like 5 or 6 counts. So really thinking about making those exhales longer is going to help to activate that parasympathetic nervous system to kind of help reduce some of that anxiety. Another great thing is to meditate. Insight Timer and Headspace are great apps. This is not sponsored in any way. I personally use Insight Timer. It is free and it has amazing free meditations. Restorative yoga is amazing, listening to soothing music, journaling, making a gratitude list, and even just splashing cold water on your face or taking a cold shower, which I know sounds miserable. I am one that likes my showers like steaming hot. However, there's a lot of research that shows that taking a cooler or a colder shower can help to move the body out of the sympathetic state and into a more grounded ventral state. So that's a fun fact. Another strategy that is very helpful is something called this butterfly hug. And it's really simple. For a butterfly hug, all you have to do is wrap your arms around your body at the level of your shoulders. And essentially, you're giving yourself a hug, right? And you're going to alternate patting one shoulder and then the other until you feel calm. So like a butterfly would maybe flutter their wings, you are kind of mimicking that on your own body. Even pressing, using your hands to just press on certain parts of your body can help bring your body back into that present focus and can be really helpful in activating that ventral vagal state. Another thing is just getting out in nature. Nature is so inherently calming and relaxing. So getting out in nature is a big one for activating that ventral state. So what about when you're at the bottom of your ladder, when you're in that dorsal vagal shutdown or collapse? Well, we got to get back up that ladder. And in order to climb up the ladder and into a state of regulation, you'll need to energize your body. A lot of these things are going to be intuitive, but I think that they're worth mentioning. Things like listening to high beat music, doing some jumping jacks, or a quick free YouTube HIIT workout. using the breath again, but this time you're going to flip-flop it. So if you're feeling collapsed and shut down, you can use the breath, but what you're going to want to do is inhale for longer. So let's say inhale on a count of five, and then exhale more quickly. So maybe exhale on a count of two or three, and repeat that frequently. I have a lot of clients who say, I try this deep breathing thing and it doesn't work. And I say, how many times have you done it? And they're like, I tried once or twice. Well, of course, breathing once or twice is not going to help. The name of this game is to practicing these things repetitively and frequently so that they can be better accessed quicker when you're in a moment of sympathetic activation or dorsal vagal shutdown. So of course we want to use these tools as ways to regulate when we're in that activated state, but we also want to practice these things when we're calm too and when we feel more regulated. We'll be able to access them more quickly when we are dysregulated. Another thing that's super helpful for the dorsal vagal, for moving out of that dorsal vagal shutdown, is going to be movement, more movement. So holding a plank position, doing a sun salutation, any way that can create heat in the body. This might mean playing and being silly or screaming into a pillow or dancing alone in your apartment. Whatever you can do to move energy through the body is going to help bring you out of this dorsal vagal shutdown or collapse. Singing, humming, chanting, and even gargling water have shown to be effective as well. This might sound intuitive or maybe even obvious to you. It honestly wasn't to me before I started learning about the polyvagal theory, but when we think about that ladder, right, the dorsal vagal shutdown is all the way on the bottom of the ladder. And if you were to climb back up the ladder, you would have to move through sympathetic in order to get back to ventral. And that is the way that we become regulated too. So if we're in that dorsal vagal shutdown, it's important to access that energy, to kind of stir it up and get it hot and move it out of the body. And that will help you get back to a more regulated place. Okay, so you might be thinking, these are all things that I know make me feel good, but I never have time to do them. Well, yes, and that's part of the problem. And hear me say this, I'm guilty too. There are so many moments in my life when I know I'm in my sympathetic state. This happened earlier today. And I know that pausing and taking some deep breaths will do me some good, but I don't do it. And this is in part because I'm stubborn and it's woven into my personality, but it's also part of my conditioning. I never used to be aware that I lived in chronic sympathetic activation, but now I know. I know that I'm prone to anxiety and I'm prone to being easily overwhelmed and stressed. And now I notice it. I notice it in my body. I notice it in my thoughts and in my feelings. And even, to be honest, even like 2 years ago, I did not have this awareness. I really didn't. Like, I could tell you in my thoughts that I was anxious, but I was so out of touch with the physical sensation and the physical component and really even the emotional component, I didn't know how all-encompassing it was. Learning about the polyvagal theory has allowed me to learn how to pause. It's allowed me to practice mindfulness, to practice present moment awareness so that I can notice the various aspects of what it feels like when I'm in this sympathetic activation or when I'm in my dorsal vagal shutdown. And it's given me tools to actually do something about it. It's allowed me to access a deeper sense of self-agency and honestly self-responsibility. And I never realized how much better I could feel if I really took some time to take care of myself and to be intentional about having moments throughout the day where I stop and I regulate back into my ventral vagal state. This is health. And I fully, fully believe that nervous system regulation is a tool that every single human needs in their toolbox to be healthy. And it's tools that we can have and we can access easily if we practice them. And that's really the hard part, right? We can have all this knowledge. We can acknowledge that we're living in a chronic sympathetic state, or that we're have moved down the ladder and into this dorsal state. Okay, once we know it, now we have a responsibility to self. We have a responsibility to our bodies and to our minds. We get to be self-compassionate and regard ourselves with a posture of self-love and a posture of curiosity, and one that says, okay, I'm going to take care of this. It might not make all of my stress or my anxiety go away. Those feelings of depression might still be there. And there's things that I can do to help make it a little bit better and to help feel a little bit better and more in my body and connected to my present life. We get to do that. We have that option. And I hope that by learning about the polyvagal theory and starting to have some language around this, and by learning about this amazing system that we all have, this social engagement system, this ventral vagal state, let's learn to use it. Let's learn to live into it. Let's learn to access that energy more than we do so that we can become more balanced, so that we can become more healthy mentally and physically. It's honestly hard for me to believe that we're at the end of this season, that like actually flew by so fast. If you want to read more about the polyvagal theory, I have a few blog posts that I've written about it, and you can find those on my website. My website is rachelesellers.com. And I also post a lot of polyvagal content on my Instagram account. So if you don't already follow me there, go ahead and look that up and give me a follow. I'm posting pretty much every day now, just great tools related to the polyvagal theory and other concepts related to mental health. So my account is Rachel, and that's with an E-L, by the way. So Rachel with an E-L, and an underscore Elise, E-L-I-S-E. Fun fact, that's my middle name. I hope that you stick around for season two. I'm diving into a whole season on eating disorders and disordered eating. This is, I wouldn't say it's second in line to my passion with polyvagal theory. I think my passion for polyvagal and my passion for eating disorders, if I had to rate them on how passionate I am about them, they would be pretty equal. So I'm really excited about this next season. I'm going to address several myths surrounding eating disorders. I'm going to talk a lot about the link between trauma and eating disorders. And I'm also going to talk about some of the sociocultural factors that influence the development and maintenance of eating disorders. So I'm going to just provide some education and talk about things like diet culture and weight stigma and fat phobia and some of the cultural movements really that are coming to light, that are being talked about more, and that really do play a huge part in eating disorders, in understanding them and healing from them. So I hope that you will stick around. Thank you for being here, and I will see you later. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you learned something new. Just a reminder that this podcast is about mental health and mental health concepts, and education about psychology and therapy is not a substitute for individual therapy. If you want to help this podcast grow and get it into the hands of other listeners, please subscribe, rate, or leave me a review. It really does make a difference.